Good afternoon. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth. Well, I wanted to do a different kind of show today. Rather than have a theme, just talk to an interesting person. How did I decide how to do that? Well, I got on Facebook and I looked at my Facebook friends and looked at, who would be interesting? My gosh, there's a lot of interesting people in Alaska, but the one that popped to the top of my list was Bob Kaufman. Because every time I run into Bob, I hear about a new business he's starting, a new adventure he's had, or some extraordinary thing that he's involved in. And I thought it would just be really fun to have a conversation and share that with you. Bob is an entrepreneur. He has a thriving internet business based right here in Anchorage. And he is also an extraordinary outdoor person who has done these long distance cold swims, which you may, if you want to call in, you might want to ask him, well, why the heck did you do that? But after you meet him in our interview, I think you'll understand why. Bob, thank you for being with me today.
Well, thanks for having me, Charles.
So you decided to swim across Knik Arm from the far side into Anchorage. And, you know, I grew up in Anchorage, and I was taught that that water was instant death. You know, it was too cold, the currents were too fast, too muddy, you know, the quicksand, stay out of the water. And here you decided to swim across it. How did that come about? And what was it like to do that?
Well, it's definitely too, people here are trained to fear that body of water, you know, and I think a lot of it has to do with the mud flats. I lived in San Francisco for a few years, and I belonged to the Dolphin Club. And we would do these swims where we would swim across the Golden Gate Bridge. We'd swim from the Bay Bridge to the Golden Gate Bridge, big, long swims out in the open water. And I was surprised when I came to Alaska that nobody was really doing this. And I remember I was at a Nature Conservancy board meeting probably 15 years ago, and we went over with Clem Tillion to visit him in Halibut Cove. And I made this comment about, hey, has anybody swam across here? And he's like, nah, nobody's ever going to do that. You got to be nuts. Which, of course, is a bit of a challenge.
That meant you had to do it, huh?
Well, it was interesting. So I actually had brainstormed some ideas with a friend of mine, Chris Hodel, and he came up with the idea of swimming across the inlet. Chris is a great swimmer. And I wasn't sure we were really serious about doing it. And then he told me, yeah, I got a boat. I went out there. I did a couple test swims. I think I have this thing figured out. You know, let's go do it. So we planned the swim for August about 5 years ago. We really had to pick the right tide. And the truth is, it was 5.9 miles, but we did it in 75 minutes, which obviously means we were getting pushed pretty well from the tide. And so the
The water, you were swimming in the water, but the water was moving you in the right direction. So you didn't have to swim 5.9 miles.
No, we definitely didn't swim. Yeah. No, because I can't swim 5.9 miles in that amount of time.
Speedboat, right.
No, the trick was this. What we figured out is that there's a huge recirculating eddy near Point McKenzie. And Chris did a test where he went in the water there and he could not escape it. Basically put him in a big circle.
Oh my gosh.
So having done these swims in the Bay Area, I kind of plotted this thing out on a map and figured out that what we needed to do was move 3 miles away from Anchorage. 3 miles out past Point McKenzie, and our goal in the first 3 miles of that swim was to get a quarter mile offshore so we wouldn't get caught up in that eddy. So we literally went 3 miles past Point McKenzie, pointed straight towards Fire Island. We're getting pushed towards Anchorage, but we cleared Point McKenzie by enough that we were able to make it.
I see. And so then the tide is pulling you basically upstream towards Anchorage, towards Palmer, and you're watching the city go by. And
oh, it's beautiful. Totally beautiful view out there. Yeah, basically what happened was the tide was pulling us pretty hard. We got past Point McKenzie. The tide slacked up enough so that we could swim across and get over to the port.
And you ended up right at the port of Anchorage?
Yeah.
Right where you planned to come?
Yeah. We probably couldn't do it again and end up in the same place if we tried.
Huh. So the water is really cold. Is it any colder than the San Francisco Bay? Or
actually, it wasn't. It was 57 degrees the day we did that swim. I used to swim year-round in the water in San Francisco, and it would range between 48 around New Year's to 63, something like that, in the end of the summer or in September. So it was pretty comfortable. We had a lightweight wetsuit, which in fact overheated us on the swim.
Oh, in Knik Arm, it was too warm for you.
Yeah, because normally when I'm swimming in 57-degree water, I would wear a neoprene cap and that's it.
I see. And so the wetsuit, what's the purpose of that? Just to keep you from getting hypothermia and maybe make you a little faster? Or
yeah, both of those. Yeah, the flotation makes you faster because you're staying more on top of the water. Also, we didn't know how long of a swim it would be. So if it turned out to be a long swim, we ended up swimming the identical distance a couple of years later, which was across Kachemak Bay. We went from Land's End to the Sultry, identical distance. That one took 3 hours and 22 minutes. And
the Sultry is a restaurant in Halibut Cove and Land's End is the hotel right out the end of Homer Spit.
Yeah. So that one was, I think it was like high 40s water temperature, mm-hmm. 3 hours and 20 minutes swim.
3 hours and 20 minutes in that cold of water. That's just incredible.
I don't think I would have pulled that one off without the wetsuit. And we didn't know. We didn't know if and how long it would take us to get across
Kinnick Arm. How does that compare to like a marathon? I know you've done the tour of Anchorage many times. Have you done marathon running? I mean, how does it compare to that kind of physical experience?
Well, I've done Ironman distance triathlons. And I think swimming in open water is so much more fun. I mean, you get, like, it's beautiful. You get to see the city. You have the currents working around you. You know, when you're swimming across, that area Cook Inlet, the water is so muddy, you literally can't see something 2 inches away, so you don't see anything underwater.
Right.
But I just think it's more interesting. You're surrounded by the elements.
But, I mean, the physical exhaustion factor equivalent or?
No. No, you do an Ironman distance triathlon, and, you know, the last 3 hours is mental agony just trying to keep your technique together and keep it together. Now, I will say swimming the Catchmac Bay Swim, that was tough. And when we got close to Halibut Cove and I first saw the bottom, I was like, we're going to make it. Yeah. For a long time, I didn't know if we were going to make it on that swim. We could not get past Gull Island. The water was pushing against us, and we just had to pull hard.
Oh, my gosh, the currents are significant in there.
Yeah, it's everything.
All right, folks, this is Charles Woolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. My guest today is Bob Kaufman. We have a lot to talk about, but this long-distance swimming thing is really has caught my imagination. If you get on our website at kska.org, there's a picture of Bob there and some links, one of which is to an article that is from the Homer News about this swim that he's talking about, and there's this great picture of you there, where your head is sticking out of the water and you are like holding up a Nalgene water bottle getting ready to drink. And I never really thought about that. You're swimming, but you're working out for a long period of time. You need water. And, you know, what are the kind of physical preparations you have to do, you know, and keep, you know, do you have to eat? Do you have to, you know, keep your nutrition up? Because you're using a lot more energy than if you were just running, because that cold water is sapping the energy out of your body, right?
Totally. You got to bring some calories in. You know, that's a good way of avoiding hypothermia. And, you know, it's like any long distance event. You really got to manage what you're expending versus what you're bringing in. And of course, you're not going to be drinking salt water, so you got to have fresh water.
So there's a boat following you along. Somebody's going to hand you the stuff you need?
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. When we did the Cook Inlet swim, the Turnagain Arm swim, we each had a boat and we needed to because the currents were so squirrely. You know, you could get 50 feet apart and all of a sudden you're a quarter mile apart. One guy rides one current, another guy rides another current. When we did Catchmac Bay, we just had one boat. Clem Tillion came in his big boat and came along with us. And that was proven to him we could do it.
Yeah. All right, folks. If you want to get in on the conversation, you're most welcome to. And Bob will take your questions or comments, and I would be interested in what folks have to say as well. The number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside the Anchorage area, we have a toll-free number, 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to reach us, too. We check this email address when we're in the studio, hometownalaska@ksKA.org. And I read those questions on the air. And so if you can't call, that's a good way to get on the show. So you are a participant in all kinds of outdoor stuff, not just long distance swimming. You mentioned Ironman, you mentioned these other things. And you were telling me that actually an outdoor adventure is what you originally brought you to Alaska. Tell that story. What year was that? And you're coming from Boston, if I recall.
It was 1986. I'll bet you it was close to 25 years ago this week that I actually first stepped foot in Alaska. I was working for a consulting firm in Boston, Bain & Company. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but Mitt Romney was one of the original guys there. And I went there out of college, and typically you'd go there for a couple of years and go back to business school, and they asked me if I wanted to get promoted to their MBA-level job, and I thought that sounded good, but I asked him, can I go take a leave of absence? And a friend of mine said, hey, let's go up to Alaska and climb Mount McKinley. He had hooked up with Janay Expeditions, who's no longer in business, in part due to some things that occurred on our guided trip, but we tried to do a guided ascent of the South Buttress, and that didn't work. So everybody left, went back home. I really wanted to climb the mountain, couldn't find anybody to do it with. So I ended up climbing it by myself. So I basically went back to Talkeetna.
Had you ever done anything like that before?
Actually not. I really had never climbed a big mountain, but I learned a ton on the South Buttress trip. And it was clear. it was clear we weren't going to make the summit. I really wanted to do it. So I spent a bunch of time talking to my lead guide. You know, if I wanted to come back and do the West Buttress, it's, you know, it's there's other people on the route. You're not completely on your own. And, you know, I learned a lot. I mean, we had crevasse falls on that trip. We had tons of avalanches. In terms of understanding what the risks were, I had a pretty good lesson.
Yeah, but not enough of a lesson to say, I'm not going to do this.
Well, it was funny. We actually brought about 2.5 weeks worth of food. We spent 25 days on the South Buttress. We all starved. I got back to Talkeetna. I'd lost 20 pounds.
Wow.
But I was acclimatized, and I wanted to get right back up on the mountain. So I ate like 3 or 4 meals a day. I tried to eat ice cream between every meal. I gained a lot of weight back. And I went back up the mountain 3 days later, and it ended up taking me a couple of weeks to go up the West Buttress on my own. But all in all, it was, you know, 35 days, but incredible experience. And it was kind of, I remember getting dropped off, you know, when I was coming back to do the West Buttress, and this plane drops me off there, and all these other climbers who are in teams come up to me, and they're like, oh, you're going to climb up this by yourself? And, you know, because I really didn't have a lot of experience, I didn't want to have a lot of conversation. And they're like, well, what else have you climbed? Have you climbed this or that? And I was like, yeah, too busy putting my gear together here.
And the answer is nothing. I've never...
really, the answer is nothing.
Amazing. Yeah. But you made it.
Yeah.
That must have been awesome. Were you standing there by yourself on the summit?
Actually, not. On my summit day, I ran into a couple of Koreans at the 17,200 foot camp and ended up going up to the summit with them, you know, and of course I met other people on the route too, but it's just long. Climbing that mountain is long, but it was incredible. I ended up summiting on my right around my 25th birthday. I think it was 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, there you are looking at you know, looking out 100 miles in every direction. This is something I had been talking about doing for 6 months, set my mind to do it. You know, finally took me 35 days to do it. It was a pretty good feeling.
Oh, I bet. All right, let's go to a caller. Ross is calling from Anchorage. Ross?
Yes, I just wanted to call and give the guy some respect because I do some backcountry snowboarding and hiking, and I hike and paraglide and stuff like that. And I also lived in Maui for years, and I swim like a fish. And when he said he swam across Ketchumak Bay, I was, you know, because I was actually on Maui when the guy swam from Maui to Molokai, then to Lanai, and then back to Maui. And I just have a lot of respect for guys who do things like this. You know, because it's hard enough for me to get to the top of, you know, Tin Can or something like that, and these guys are swimming across Ketchumak Bay, and I'm just calling to give respect, basically.
I'm with you. Okay. I think you're speaking for a lot of people right now. So thanks for the call. Bob?
Well, that's so nice of you. You know, the truth is we really need a swim club. You've, you know, swam in Maui. We need a place in Anchorage, like the Dolphin Club is in San Francisco, where people can go swim out in the inlet, take a hot sauna afterwards, warm up. It'd be fun to get people together who are like-minded.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they don't get swept away, too. All right. Matt, do you have a question?
A couple of comments, Charles.
Yeah.
You know, swimming in the bay, the Dolphin Club, which is an amazing place to swim. I spent a summer swimming there a couple of times a week. And the biggest thing they have going is that they actually have hot showers and saunas. So when you come out of the water, there's a place to warm up. And so that's one of the reasons you see these swimmers that even on New Year's Day, they're swimming from Alcatraz with the tide. But they can come in and warm up afterwards. And I think Cook Inlet presents the problems that the currents are too varied, but Bob, can you think of a place near Anchorage where it would be possible to have some open water swimming and maybe a club to warm up afterward?
You are totally right about the sauna in the shower. That is everything. And I don't know. It's a good question because...
But it's a great feeling, isn't it, when you get out of that cold water and get under a hot shower? There's nothing like it.
Oh, it's a fantastic feeling. My skin actually always turns blue and red and splotchy, you know, when I've been in cold water. You know, we swim a lot in Little Campbell Lake, but it's small, it's short, it's not really the right thing. I can't think of a place. I wonder if it wouldn't be possible to do it in the inlet, but, you know, you'd have to be pretty careful about which tides you swam in.
Right. I know that the races they do in San Francisco Bay, they time when the start is in terms of where the tide is flowing, so they're always swimming with the tide. But Cook Inlet seems to present more challenges than you get in San Francisco Bay.
Well, they also, nobody goes out of Aquatic Park. You know, they have the pier that surrounds the area in San Francisco.
Right.
So nobody really goes out of there except when you do the open water swims. So that's pretty safe. I mean, in the worst case, when I used to swim across Aquatic Park with a big tide behind me, it might take me 5 minutes to get to the end, 20, 25 minutes to get back. You know, if you go out into the inlet in a place where it's going to take you an hour to get back, you got a problem.
Well, the other thing is, you know, the currents, I've done a lot of boating in the inlet, and you get currents that are like 8 knots that nobody could ever swim against.
Totally.
And even if up by Cairn Point, which is the point that's just up inlet from the port, there's some significant whirlpools there that will actually jerk a boat around. I don't know what they do to a swimmer. So I don't think we're advising people to do this. This is not like, this is not like throw your suit on and get out there. It's pretty significant thing to get involved in.
Right. You know, just thinking about it, what you mentioned is true. To do it in the inlet, you would only be able to do it during certain tides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Matt. Thanks for calling in. Matt Clayman, who got a similar build to my guest and is also quite an athlete in his own right. So my guest today is Bob Kaufman, and we have been talking about outdoors and long distance cold weather swimming, and I have a feeling there are going to be more interest in that. But I also wanted to talk a little bit about your business career, because you started out in Boston. You were an MBA, a business consultant, and you came to Alaska, and I guess kind of had to make an adjustment. I mean, surely you're a person who's here in Alaska because you want to be. You could do your kind of business entrepreneurship anywhere else, and maybe easier than here.
So first of all, I actually, just to correct that, I actually don't have an MBA, but I did have MBA.
No,
I was too busy trying to set the world on fire.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
In fact, okay. When I worked for Bain, I did a lot of recruiting of the, we used to like to hire people from Harvard Business School and Stanford, and we wanted to get the Miller Scholars and the Baker Scholars who were at the top of their class. And I remember I would be interviewing these people, and I thought, well, maybe I should go back to business school. And I thought, well, this is kind of crazy. I'm going to go back to business school for 2 years, and then I'm going to be on the other side of the table trying to get back into the job I already have. That doesn't really make a lot of sense. But, it's interesting. I think that, in terms of business opportunity in Alaska, I think a couple things certainly limit it. I think what's great about Alaska is it's not as competitive of a landscape in some ways. So you can start things and try things, and people are generally supportive. I think it's easier to do small things up here.
Just to get off the ground.
I think so. I think it's mm-hmm. very difficult to do anything of real scale. I think, industry mm-hmm. up here, first of all, is not as innovative as other places. It's dominated by some, very big players. Mm-hmm. There isn't the same kind of culture of innovation. So, it's interesting. I was talking to Yael last night, a friend of ours in San Francisco.
Yael is your wife.
Yeah, Yael, my wife.
And your business partner, too.
And my business partner, too. And yes. And a great mom and just a kind of a great, a wonderful, best decision I ever made in my life. So, I was reading the news yesterday. Microsoft, basically bought, makes this offer to buy Skype for $8.2 billion. About a year and a half ago, a friend of ours from San Francisco actually bought Skype from eBay for nothing because they were losing money. And then they turn around, 2 years later, sell for $8.2 billion. You look at that and you think, what did the guy make? $500 million on this? I don't know what he made. I'm sure his firm made more than $1 billion. So, not that somebody needs those types of opportunities, but I mean, everything up here is very small compared to the kinds of numbers that occur in the lower 48.
So there's a decision to be here.
Totally. Yeah, there's totally a decision to be here. And it's something, I truthfully go back and forth. For me, it's less about the money or the size of what you do. It's more about, is the opportunity large enough to justify doing it right, to justify mm-hmm. the kind of investment you would want to make to bring in really top specialists to help you put a vision in place? And unfortunately, there are not that many opportunities in Alaska that you can identify that have not been done that warrant that kind of investment. And so then what happens is you end up spending your time doing things that you really should be hiring somebody to do for you, and then you don't mm-hmm. move up the food chain like you should.
Right. But the benefits are?
Oh, well, the benefits are... the benefits are there's something incredibly satisfying about, having your own business, or incredibly satisfying about, being able to kind of shape your life and live your life the way you want to.
Throw your skis on, go skiing. Yeah, I don't have to drive somewhere, right?
Yeah, and we have a family now. We've got a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 1-year-old. And, just think about raising kids in Alaska compared to mm-hmm. raising kids somewhere else. I mean, we get to do things in the outdoors. The schools are great. The people are great. The community's great. I mean, there's just such a variety of things that you can do. So, it's all basically a big trade-off, and you have to decide what's important to you. But it is a trade-off. Yeah. It's not like, it's not, you know, it's a trade-off, and you're always aware of the trade-off.
Yeah. All right. Now I'd like to go to Richard, who is in Anchorage and I think has another question about swimming. Richard?
I'm a Canuck Arm day sailor myself and spent a little bit of time out there and got an idea of what he was talking about when he was referring to that eddy. And I guess he had planned to his swim so he wouldn't have to encounter that. And it's a pretty noticeable rip right in there. And I also spend a lot of time while I'm sailing wondering if I'm going to be able to get back to the launching ramp. I rely solely on my sail, no motor. And if I'm going to be able to get back to the launching ramp on this wind and tide, or will I have to anchor and wait for the next one? And wondering what some of his thoughts were about that when he was swimming across there and realizing how much the current's carrying him.
Well, you know, we had a motorboat. We had actually two motorboats, one for Chris and one for myself. So, I mean, that's a pretty nice insurance policy, right? That pretty much basically takes all the worry out of it and turns it basically into fun.
Okay.
Yeah, you're taking more of a risk on your little sailboat because the wind can whip up out there. And I've been in waters that were kind of scary. And when you've got those strong currents, sometimes even anchoring isn't such a great option. So it's definitely an interesting place to boat.
Not a lot of us out there boating, but it's good to hear people enjoying the wild seascapes that we get up here. And just congratulations, and maybe we'll see you again out there.
Well, thank you. And what you did is braver than what we did, or what you're doing is braver than what we did.
All right. And
didn't bump into any belugas just by chance, huh?
All right.
No.
Thanks for calling, Richard.
Thank you. Bye.
So any more of these kinds of open water swimming adventures that you have on your list that you'd like to do? Or now you've got kids, you think, well, I better sit back and sit on my laurels. I can't believe that, though.
You know, the challenge now is, obviously, I love adventure. The challenge is I've got less time for it, and I need to do it with my family. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my original adventures were a month long. And then I started doing wilderness trips that were, you know, before I was married, that may have been a week long. Now I have to figure out and go out and have adventures in an afternoon. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I learned how to fly a couple of years ago, because you really can. I mean, you can take off from Merrifield, you can go out to a place like Lake George, be out there for 2 or 3 hours, come back to town, and it's just, you know, it's, you were just visiting a place that's more beautiful than most people will ever see in their life, mm-hmm. you know, and it's, mm-hmm. it's 23 minutes by air from Anchorage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm more thinking about how to, you know, how to have really meaningful experiences with the kids. I hope that I'm spending time with them in a way where they're going to want to go out and do these things with mm-hmm. me. You know, there's mm-hmm. a period of time here where I'm working really hard. Yeah, Elle's working really hard. And I'm waiting until the kids get a little older and a little more capable. You know, this last weekend, for example, we did a little float trip. We went down to Portage, and we floated all of a mile and a half. It was just Ari, who's 6, and Alana, who's 4. And it was great. We stopped. You know, we floated for 10 minutes. Had a big fire, cooked up some hot dogs, and uh-huh. then we probably floated for another 20 minutes. And halfway through that second one, Alana's like, when are we going to be there? When are we going to be there? But it was a great adventure.
On which river were you?
Portage Creek.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. We just drove down Portage Creek. We literally floated a mile and a half, and it was a wonderful experience for the kids, and yeah. it was fun to be with them, and they were running around the gravel bars.
Uh-huh.
So I think the trick here is to you know, figure out how to kind of get the feeling as a family and in shorter periods of time.
Yeah, well, you know, this is an area where I have some experience because our family's done a lot of camping in Prince William Sound by boat rather than kayak, and even babies are into it, you know. It's just a matter of pacing yourself and of paying attention to comfort, you know. You can't do it like you might have done when you're a bachelor and you're just roughing it. You're making sure people are well-fed, they're warm, they're comfortable, and then they can't be happier because they've got their parents' undivided attention. And they've got total freedom. You know, you land on some little island and just say, explore. This is your island, you know. And most kids will never get an experience like that.
No, that is a great way of describing it. And keeping them warm and just being sensitive to where their head is at.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken people on trips. I remember floating the Copper River with my brother-in-law and sister-in-law. And we went an hour too long on the first day. And it for the entire trip, which was 4 or 5 days long, that experience on the first day made them afraid the whole rest of the trip.
Right.
You can never push them past that point where they feel like they're in an unsafe place and they just want to go back home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're on your own, then you can do whatever you want. You might get into that zone of thinking that's just keep pushing. But if you're with, like, as you say, new people or with kids, as a leader, you got to be thinking about, are they fed? You know, they get food at the right times. Are they comfortable? Are they scared? Are they cold? Because it's, as you say, it's all mental, isn't it?
It's totally. You know, you can be in a city. You know, and it's true. You gotta eat and stay warm. It just makes a real difference in your head. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're
probably
warm.
The same thing with your swimming too. If somebody falls in the water and panics, they've got 30 seconds to live, but you can stay in for 3 hours.
Yeah, no, it's totally a frame. I think all these things are a frame of mind, how mm-hmm. you approach it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to tell a story before we go to the break that I think is going to interest our listeners quite a bit. You do a travel-related website, which we're going to talk about in the second half hour. There are some very famous people who found you through that, and you spent part of a summer with them, Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart. Tell us about that experience.
Well, it was interesting. I got an email probably, like 2-3 years ago from somebody who said she was the assistant to Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart, and I didn't know who Calista was. They were thinking about coming up to Alaska, and she had some questions. Would I get back to her? I got back to her a couple days later. I gave her my cell phone. I'm driving down to Seward with the family. We're about 30 minutes from Seward, right where you're about to lose cell phone reception. I get a phone call from a blocked phone number, and he says, Bob, and I'm like, yeah, and he goes, hi, this is Harrison Ford. And
who is it really?
So I said, well, God, I'm about to lose cell phone reception. I didn't really want to ask him for his phone number. So I said, you know, can you call me back? So I ended up talking to him about 45 minutes later. We had half hour later, we had a really long conversation. He wanted to come up. He's a pilot, and he was looking to put together, an itinerary that would be interesting for him. Calista had not really done outdoors types of things. She wanted to bring Liam, who I believe was about 8 at the time, her son, and I wanted to help them have an experience up here that would really be kind of an authentic Alaskan experience where people, you know, people wouldn't bother them, where they could, you know, just get the same joy out of Alaska that you and I mm-hmm. get out of Alaska.
And presumably money is not a big problem, so you don't have to budget too much.
Yeah, although I actually felt a special responsibility to make sure they were getting good value mm-hmm. because, you know, you just want to think that, you just want, you know, if you can't go to Alaska and get treated by a normal person and have your privacy,
right?
Where in the world can you do it? So, mm-hmm. Well, the style trip that, you know, we ended up putting together for them is not a style of trip that, you know, I could do for myself. For example, we ended up doing a float trip where we had a fly-in chef and, helicopter. So if anybody needed to leave and go back and sleep in the lodge, you know, we could do it. I'll tell you what the ultimate combination on a trip is: a cell phone, a helicopter, and a fly-in chef.
Not exactly the way I usually travel, but yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds
so
nice.
Well, it was great. We got to spend time with them. I think they had a wonderful experience. At the end of the trip, he told me, you know, we've had a lot of family vacations. This was really a family adventure. And we've, I feel fortunate that I've been able to stay in touch with them. They're just the nicest people. And, you know, it's a really interesting lesson that there's really two different personas. There's the person that the world thinks somebody who's well-known is, mm-hmm. and then there's the person who they really are. And I think if more people understood who the person really was, they would treat them differently. They'd treat them with more respect. They'd give them more privacy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it'd be fun to be well-known. On the other hand, God, they value so much just being in contexts where they're everyday people.
Being a real human being.
Because they are not like your typical Hollywood people or
whoever the typical Hollywood person is, right? I mean, I guess they're all just regular people underneath.
Well, no, I think these guys work really hard to just be good people, mm-hmm. to be normal people, mm-hmm. and not to be a part of that scene. And it's especially challenging because people want to put them in that role. And
right.
That's not who they are. I mean, Harrison's kind of concerned about certain conservation issues. He's concerned about aviation issues. Calista's a mom. She's trying to do a good job of raising her kid. They both work super hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of one of the unfortunate things about media in our society. I think it distorts people and it creates its own reality, which is unfortunate in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, when we come back from our break, I'd like to talk a little bit about what the perfect itinerary was, because presumably you put together a pretty good one for them. And we'll talk more about Bob's business and his travel advice. And if you have questions or want to get on the air, I'll be giving you that phone number right after the break. So stick with us on Hometown Alaska.
If If you missed part of today's program, or if you'd like to listen again to Hometown Alaska on KSKA, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. A copy of Hometown Alaska will be available this afternoon on our website at kska.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Bob Kaufman, who is a sort of an extraordinary outdoorsman and a entrepreneur. We haven't gotten into some of the other things that he does, all the films that he's made about Alaska and Alaskan businesses and travel and, oh, his celebrity friends and all that. It's fun. And if you want to get on the air with Bob and ask any questions, here's the phone number. It's 550-8433. That's 550-8433. That's the number that's local here in the Anchorage area. And if you're calling from outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to reach us as well, hometownalaska@kska.org. And, you know, I'd be interested if folks have other interesting people that they think would be good individuals for us to interview. Just go ahead and send me an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. I'd love to hear about your ideas, and I'll take a look at them. I won't read those on the air, but any questions or comments for my guest, Bob Kaufman, we can put on the air. So we were talking a moment ago about the time you spent with Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart, kind of making friends with them and showing them around Alaska. And what was the itinerary that you put together for them? I mean, it seems like most of us are not going to be able to afford the chef and the helicopter and all that. But when you're thinking about like showing off the best of Alaska to people who have essentially unlimited resources, what did you decide to do?
Well, it's interesting. They had a 2-week trip. So they spent the first week flying their own caravan around Southeast. And then when they got to this part of the state, I wanted to do something where they would be really immersed in the wilderness, but it wouldn't be scary to them. And we have friends, Carl and Kirsten Dixon. You probably know them. They run Within the Wild.
It's a lodge on the west side of Cook Inlet. They have a couple of lodges, but they have that really beautiful one that is on, the name of the lake is suddenly escaping.
Winter Lake.
Winter Lake Lodge, right.
It's Finger Lake, but it's called Winter Lake Lodge.
And Kirsten is an incredible chef.
Yeah. I thought that was the ultimate combination because Kristen, you know, there's a lot of lodges in Alaska that are about hunting and fishing. There are very few lodges in Alaska that do a good job just for general recreation, you know, where you don't have the kind of the hook and bullet. You know, Kirk Hessel and Alaska Wildland Adventures is the other really great example that stands out for me, and there's other ones as well. But I thought this would be perfect because Carl Dixon is great at rafting, and they're right next to the Happy River, which is, you know, Andy Embeck wrote a book on rafting in Alaska. He gave 5 rivers in the entire state, a book on kayaking, gave 5 stars to only 5 rivers, and the Happy River was one of them. It's got some really nice big water. It's clear water. It's a beautiful stream. So they're very proximate to that. Great food. They have, you know, beautiful lodge out there. And, you know, it was a situation where they're also really good at kind of knowing what somebody can take or knowing what somebody's appetite for adventure is. So it seemed like this is an opportunity to go run a really beautiful river that's got some, you know, gorgeous rapids in it. If we wanted, we could have done some fishing, although we didn't do much of that. But you got the backup of a 6-minute helicopter flight if you need to. You know, let's say we're sleeping in the tents at night and it isn't working out. You take a short helicopter ride, you come back and you sleep at the lodge. And the truth is, this trip was not that expensive. Their entire trip, I think, was probably just wasn't that expensive. Not as expensive as what a lot of people do when they come up here and, you know, spend 10 or 14 days. So, You know, I think wilderness lodges are not very well known. They're great experiences. They, you know, they cost money, but they're not as expensive as you think. Because let's say you spend $500.
All inclusive, yeah.
Yeah, they're all inclusive. You're not paying for excursions. You're not paying for meals. Mm-hmm. If they're in a remote place, you're getting a flight scene trip on the way out there. And then the way I think about it, too, is how many hours am I actually spending in the place I want? So on a you know, think of Denali, for example. You have a choice. Do you stay at the park entrance? Do you stay in Kantishna? If you stay in Kantishna, you are in the heart of the park.
And Kantishna is that private inholding that's in the middle of the park, and there's three lodges there.
Right.
Right.
Right. So it looks like, well, these places are $500 a night. They're more expensive, but not really when you put all your excursions and meals in it. And certainly when you think about dollars per hour spent in the heart of the park, it's a bargain.
And how much of it is spent sitting on a bus,
right,
as opposed to doing something?
Yeah, right.
Good point. Although for a lot of us, of course, the $500 is simply, we couldn't afford it. But if you could afford it, it's a great way to go.
Well, totally. And the truth is, the less money you have, the more of an Alaskan adventure you're going to have.
Right.
You know, when I came up here in the late 80s and did my trips, I wasn't hiring planes to take me places. You know, I was hiking into places. I was doing really long trips. The adventure quotient on those trips is way beyond anything I'm doing today. And all they cost is what it costs to go buy my food.
Yeah. So let's talk about Alaska.org. You started this website. We've got it linked on the KSKA.org website, but you don't really need the link because Alaska.org is pretty easy to remember. What made you decide to, well, first of all, let's tell folks what it is. It's a travel website that is very full of video and information that sort of tell people why you would go to Alaska, why you go to different places, lots of advice that is direct, opinionated.
Right. So basically, Alaska.org is a site which is primarily a travel planning site, and we're doing some new things that I can tell you about as well. But it's a place where I want people to go who want to plan an independent trip in Alaska. I mean, there's a lot of easy ways to figure out how to plan a cruise. But what if you want to visit the best destinations? What if you want to take excursions? What are your options? You know, we have a visitor channel that plays in hotel rooms around the state. And that's the business I started about 20 years ago. And so we're constantly producing really great video content.
And so so what happens is a person goes into their hotel room and the TV has got a channel where they can find out about local activities, and you've made those films so that you're telling them about the activities.
Right. Yeah. Over the years, we've probably created 500 films.
Wow.
It's
called the Alaska Channel.
That's called the Alaska Channel. It plays in about maybe 12,000 hotel rooms around the state. And it's great because we've created we go out and select the companies that we want to work with that we think offer really great products. We create a really nice video that plays in the hotel, and then we use that on Alaska.org. And then we've done, you know, a lot of additional research beyond that. We're giving people tips on, you know, if you're driving to Seward, what are the best places to stop? Mm-hmm. If you want to go bear viewing, what are the best places to go bear viewing? What gear do you need when you're going hiking? You know, what are the most popular excursions you can do? So the goal of Alaska.org is to help both people who live here and also people who are visiting who want to do what I would say are kind of traditional types of itineraries, not super high adventure itineraries. We this year we launched the Alaska app, which is a massive, massive project. And what I'm basically trying to do is find the experts in local communities all around Alaska and ask them, What are really the most special spots in your town? What do you like to do? Don't tell me the stuff that I'm going to read in all the tourist brochures. Tell me, where's your swimming hole? Where, you know, what do you guys do on Friday evenings? If somebody comes to town and wants to be a local, wants to be an insider, where should they go? What should they do? Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, it's you know, you basically have to think about who your audience is. So Alaska.org is a great, if you're doing a first-time trip to Alaska or you want a traditional trip, it's, you know, it's wonderful. What we're doing with the app and all this content is ultimately going to be on Alaska.org is helping people, you know, it's a smartphone application. So as you drive around the state, we know where you are. We calculate the distance between you and all these nearby points of interest. They can be trails. They can be wildlife viewing hotspots. They can be beautiful mountain views. Historic sites. And I think Alaska badly needs this because if you think about most of the promotion, I mean, really, you know, you talk to people in the lower 48, they think a cruise is the only way to see Alaska. And a cruise is a wonderful way to see Alaska, but there's this huge market waiting to happen.
You're aimed at the independent person who's just traveling on their own, giving them the information they need to plan their trip and then to enjoy their trip using their phone rather than a travel book or some printed material.
Yeah, basically make them feel like they've got a companion, a guide right in their pocket with them. They always know where they are. They always know what's nearby.
Cool. So Alaska, but Alaska.org, despite the ORG extension, is a business. You're making money from it. And how? But by commissions when you book people, or what? How does that work?
We get some commissions. Mostly, we've gone out and picked companies that we think are really good. We've worked hard to create a site that has information you won't find anywhere else, that's really deep. And, you know, we basically told them, you know, it's advertiser supported. Mm-hmm. You know, we basically look at how much traffic they get off it, and, you know, different people contribute different amounts to participate in the website. And, you know, when I first launched it, nobody paid anything, because mm-hmm. I wanted to put who I wanted in there, and I needed to demonstrate that it would work. And now, you know, it's one of the most highly ranked sites, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 visitors a day. So it's, you know, the truth is, if you do something nobody else is doing, if you put original content out there, Google is very smart. Google will find it, and Google will put you number one for the relevant searches.
Is that where you stand, at the top of the Google searches?
Well, if you search for a term like Alaska vacations, we're number one. If you search for bear viewing in Alaska, you know, interestingly, certain places where we have good content, we're not number one. You know, we're usually on the first page, but, mm-hmm. and the truth is, the site is badly in need of a redesign, and we've actually got a beautiful new design for it. My concern is that we're going to get dinged by the search engines,
right,
when we change it. But we're going to do that in the next year.
So how did you get into the whole internet as an area to make money, or as a business? I mean, what was the impetus for doing that and starting that business?
Well, that's interesting. I got into that too late. I was hired in 1992, I believe. Well, maybe, yeah, 92 or 93, by Alaska Magazine to do a consulting study. And I remember Dana Brockway called me and said, we heard about this thing called the internet. We want to figure out what to do about it. So I went out and had no idea what it was. I went out and did a study, and I said, well, this looks pretty interesting. You guys, you know, should seriously consider it. They didn't want to do anything. And then I wanted to get Alaska.com. And I remember a guy in town
had it. Get the URL.
I wanted to buy the mm-hmm. URL. And a guy in town had it, and he wanted $15,000 for it. And I thought, $15,000? Right. You are totally insulting me. Are you kidding? Yeah, he sold it 18 months later for about $375,000.
What do you think it's worth now?
A lot less. A lot less.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's worth less. We can go into that, but I think that the search engines have become so good at finding good content.
The URL doesn't matter that much.
URL anymore. Does not matter. No, mm-hmm. I don't think it matters that much.
As long as you've got the content, that'll put you at the top of the search engine. Right.
Social media is becoming important. Mm-hmm. You know, social media is the new search, right? Mm-hmm. So I think things have really shifted. I think being a thought leader is what's important on the web today, whether you do it through social media or whether you do it through any URL. Well, anyways, nobody had registered Alaska.org, and I went out and registered it. My original idea was that I was going to let people book trips and then make a contribution to different conservation groups. Mm-hmm. And I still, it was interesting, I went out and I had raised some money for the Nature Conservancy, mm-hmm. and I went to them with this idea after I'd raised a lot of money, like a couple million bucks, and said, you know, we'd like to use the logo and we'd like to do some things. And they're like, oh, you'd have to pay $100,000 if you want to use our logo on your website. I said, are you kidding? $100,000. I'm already losing money on this thing. So so that piece of the vision never came true, but uh-huh. You know, we're constantly adding to it.
So and you run the business essentially with your wife, and mm-hmm. you have that must be a really nice lifestyle to be running your own business, and you got your own airplane, you can pick up and go, but it's not like easy. I mean, you find the flip side is you have to work a lot harder when you're working for yourself.
Well, here's the reality. The reality is it's deeply satisfying to run your own business. It's great to build a product of quality. And the most meaningful thing to Yael and me is the fact that, people support our vision, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we go out and do things and they support us. And that's an incredibly great feeling. The truth is, there is no glamour at, you know, having to talk about work at 8 or 9 o'clock at home, you know, when you want to go to sleep and spend time with your kids. We're in a very difficult situation right now because we've launched this new mobile app and, you know, at times we've had 15 people working on it. It's massively stressful, huge investment. We got to get the word mm-hmm. out. We got to let people know about it. It's scary. So, you know, you have your own business, you know, and it looks like you have your own airplane. It looks, you know, it's wonderful. But I work harder than anybody out there. I'm constantly working. Work is always on my mind. I don't have enough time to spend with my kids the way mm-hmm. I want to. And mm-hmm. I think it's a trade-off. I think you invest now so you have more freedom later on. I also think I'm just genetically the kind of person that likes to be busy, so I'll probably never have a lot of free time.
Yeah, you seem to have a certain energy level. So with the mobile app, now this is your iPhone or whatever your smartphone is, you are essentially getting information about Alaska. It knows where you are, so it knows what information to give you. restaurants, hotels, sites of interest, geology, natural history. You are spending all this money hiring people to put information in there. How do you get money back out of it? Do people pay for the app, or how do you get your investment back?
I try not to think about that. it's advertiser supported.
Mm-hmm.
The advertiser support is not nearly in line with what we're spending on the app right now. And you know what we're doing is we go to the park ranger in Kenai Fjord. It's the chief ranger for Exit Glacier. We develop an audio tour. So now everybody who goes to Kenai Fjords gets to see it with the chief park ranger. We have audio guides to the zoo and the museum and the railroad, and all these people are contributing to help create content about their area. But it's been a huge investment just in the technology platform itself. So I'm not sure that it'll ever turn out to be a good investment. It's going to be a heck of a resource for, you know, Alaskans. I'm going to continue to work on it because to me, it's a lot more fun to show people really cool, you know, show people a place on Turnagain Arm where they can stop and fill up their water bottle with natural water out of a creek, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more fun than to talk to the thousandth person about, do you want a cruise or do you want a land tour? So I mm-hmm. think it's really fun. In terms of making a return, I mean, hopefully over time, enough people will use it so that there's some value in having, you know, in being featured on it. But this is one where I'm not sure at the end of the day, from a business standpoint, it will make sense. But I think it's good for our business. I definitely think it's good for, you know, for the people who are using the product. So, you know, I've learned through the years that you make a decision up front about whether you're going to do something. It's like, you know, I was never a good climber, but one of the things I did learn is you'd stand at the base of the route, you'd look at the route, you'd make a decision, do I want to do this or do I not want to do it? And then you don't second guess yourself when you're on the wall because you make bad decisions. You just play it out and see what happens.
Just keep until you realize that you need to turn back.
Until you get new information that mm-hmm. says my original assumption did not make sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you've also done some work as a turnaround person for businesses that were already on their way into oblivion. And that's a whole different set of challenges, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's complicated because normally...
Tell us about like how you got into that and what it really means to turn around a business.
Sure. Well, I actually started a group at Bain & Company, the consulting firm that specialized in doing operations turnarounds. And the challenge with turnarounds is people do not hire you for a turnaround until things are really, really bad because nobody wants to admit they are a turnaround candidate. So...
And we're talking about a business that has been losing money, maybe losing market. It's got serious problems and its continued existence is in serious doubt by the time you walk in the door.
Yes. Yeah. You're talking about a business that basically is going to become insolvent if something radical doesn't change. I mean, for example, one of the more memorable turnarounds I did was a company called Blue Chip Cookies in San Francisco. We had 80, it's like Mrs. Fields, 80 cookie and coffee shops around the country. Half of them we owned, half of them were franchises. We were losing money to the point where the company was going to basically be put into bankruptcy in 3 months from when I went in there. And literally in the first 2 weeks, I visited every store in California. There's about 40 of them. I went to San Diego. I went to Los Angeles. And, you know, it was clear out of these 80 shops, 20 of them were losing money. So, you know, I had to make the decision to close down these stores, had to go to the landlords at malls. And, you know, they basically say, well, you signed a contract. You owe me rents for the next, you know, 3 years, even if you shut down the store. And you basically say to them, look, you know, you can't get blood out of a rock here. I'm going to close down the store. You are not going to get the rent because we don't have the money for the rent. Now you have to decide if on top of that, you want to lose your legal fees to try to recover the rent because you're not going to get the rent. I mean, it's tough.
Right.
But the advantage you have is you are not the guy who messed it up. So you can go in
right.
to all the creditors and say, you know what they want to hear in these turnarounds? They don't want to hear things are going to be all right.
Because they know that's not true.
They know it's not true, and they've been told that over and over again, and they know they're being lied to. What they want to hear is the straight scoop, and they want to hear that they're going to be dealt with fairly. They want to know that, yes, you're not going to get paid, but nobody else is going to get paid before you. We're going to do this as fair as possible. And that's great. It's a big mental relief because now they realize, okay, whatever's going to happen, I'm going to get the best outcome I can.
Mm-hmm. And so then your job is just to make these decisions, which are really tough, miserable decisions about who gets fired, which stores get closed, who doesn't get paid, and so forth. And does it work?
Well, you need to do two things for it to work. One, you need to make some pretty hard decisions about cutting the losses. The second thing is you got to find growth. You got to find some transformation for a company.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you might as well just shut it down. So, you know, in the turnarounds that I have done, you know, I'm glad to say I've generally been successful, but you don't go in with an answer right away. It's really, really hard. If it were so easy, the people that were there would have already figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what about starting a new business? You got here, you're 20 years ago, you started the Alaska Channel making these videos. You didn't know how to make a video, right?
Correct.
So what made you think that was a good idea, that now I, Bob Kaufman, am going to be a movie maker and start a brand new business from scratch that not only, I guess, had not... It'd be less of a doubt if it had been tried, never been tried, but it had been tried unsuccessfully before you did it.
Right.
So what are the factors that make you decide, well, I can learn how to do this, and then what is it like learning to do it?
Well, I think the core factor, you know, when I was a consultant, I was a business strategy consultant, and my job is to assess where there's opportunity and where there isn't. I remember right before I launched Alaska Channel, I remember talking to a couple of hotels, calling them and saying, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Would this really solve a problem for you? And they immediately said, yes. Our front desk people, they get a lot of questions. If we had someplace to refer them to, it would be great.
So guest checks into the hotel and is thinking, well, okay, I'm here. What is it there that's interesting to do? They've immediately got an issue, and so the hotel is having to answer a lot of questions and make suggestions, and you're going to step in and give them that information through another approach.
Yeah, you're basically solving the problem for the hotelier. Mm-hmm. You're giving them something so they don't have to spend front desk time, you know, talking about tours with the guest. You're solving a huge problem for the visitor. You're giving them great information about what are the best things to do. So, you know, it's
step one is kind of identify a need that's out there.
Totally.
Not identify how I can make money, but identify what people need.
And I think that is the crucial distinction. I remember, mm-hmm. I was a partner in a $100 million fund. We invested in, literally put $100 million into early stage internet companies. And one of the things I learned is, like the Alaska Gold Rush, that by the time eBay went public, which is what caused all these funds to raise a lot of money and want to get into the game, by the time they went public, all the companies that were to go public in the ensuing 2 or 3 years had already been formed. Everybody who piled in afterwards didn't do well with it. Same thing the Gold Rush in Alaska. When that ship showed up in Seattle.
Like late 90s.
Late 90s. You know, it's the same thing the Gold Rush in Seattle. Remember the ship shows up in Seattle and the headlines is $1 million worth of gold or whatever?
Ton of gold. Yeah.
That's what set off the Gold Rush. Mm-hmm. Ironically, all the good claims had already been staked by the time that boat moored in Seattle.
Right.
So
right.
I think the difference is I see a lot of knockoffs. I see a lot of Groupon knockoffs right now. Mm-hmm. I see a bunch of people doing discount ideas. I think there's a lot of like kind of follow me ideas. Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard to find a good idea because you got to identify a unique value proposition that nobody has done that really solves a problem for people, not be a Me Too player and mm-hmm. do what other mm-hmm. people have done. You know, you asked why I started Alaska Channel. I mean, I have this passion for Alaska. I love it. I thought it would be mm-hmm. really neat. I really believed that I could kind of share my passion for Alaska with people who are visiting, you know, kind of infect them with, you know, some enthusiasm about different kinds of things that I thought they would really enjoy. I've tried other things, which I kind of did because I thought I'd make money. You just don't have the staying power on those.
Right. So, and part of this was learning to make movies.
Yeah. Now, I personally was a photographer for a period of time. I spent, uh-huh. you know, I spent about a year traveling around taking photos. So I did hire people who are video production specialists to put that together. But
you're the star in a lot of these things. I mean, your face is there, and your personality is coming through. And so.
Yeah, on the stuff we're doing on the TV channel, I'm not actually on camera.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but what we've gone to, which is just great, and people love it, is we profile the people who run these companies. So, you know, it's really nice because, you know, today in this internet age, people want to buy from a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want this faceless narrator telling them what a great tour it is. They want to see you. They want to look in your eyes. They want to figure out, why are you doing this? Why are you offering these flight scene tours? What is it that it means to you? Because if you're really passionate about it, I'm going to probably have a good time with you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so then they pick up on that and then they can make a choice about what they want to do. And that's sort of the need that you're fulfilling is connecting, making that human connection.
Well, and it's also, there's so many different choices, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I could go flight seeing, I could go bear viewing, I could go fishing, I could go take a rafting trip, I could go take a jet boat trip, I could stay at this hotel, that hotel. I think what we're trying to do is show people broadly what the choices are, what we think are really good options, and then make recommendations about, you know, what company can you go with where you're going to get a good value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. This has been a fascinating conversation. We just have a few minutes left, but I've been talking to Bob Kaufman. His website, the website we've been talking about, is alaska.org. And you can find that site linked at ksk.org, as well as a couple of other interesting ones. Bob's blog, his the app that we were talking about for phones, and then also some stuff about his swimming adventures. He swam across Cook Inlet, across Knik Arm, and he swam across Kachemak Bay. He's done Ironman competitions, and you're still in incredible shape, and you are still doing a lot of stuff. What is your sort of fitness goal, or how do you stay in shape, and what do you do to stay in shape and do these marathon experiences?
My fitness goal right now is to heal my broken shoulder and my cracked ribs. But you know, I work out 45 minutes or an hour a day. I do longer things on weekends. You know, I'm gonna be 50 this summer, so I think rest is gonna be the big challenge for me, because I never rest. I've gone literally 3 and 4 years at a time without never missing a day of a workout.
And I think you must be physically gifted as well. I mean, you start out with a base of a body that's able to do marathon activities.
Maybe. You know, I'm kind of big and lanky, and I'm bow-legged, and kind of it hurts my knees when I do these long runs. And people have told me, you know, I finally broke 3 hours in the Tour of Anchorage, and one of my friends told me that my technique is awful. I did it through sheer force alone. So I'm not sure I would call myself a gifted athlete, but I can burn calories for a long time.
Yeah, right. Well, do you have any goals or anything that you would like to accomplish that you haven't done yet, either in that part of your life or in the other, the sort of the business part of your life? I guess we're mostly interested in what are you going to swim across next?
Yeah. No, you know, my one goal is if I could relive some of the wonderful experiences I've had in the Alaska wilderness, if I could do that with my family, that would be the dream. It would be a second childhood.
Such as?
Well, I want to take the kids on a long raft trip. You know, mm-hmm. we're trying to decide what river to do this summer, maybe the Gulkana, maybe the Charlie River. So, you know, I just want to get them out there where they enjoy it and they feel like, like you say, it's safe, mm-hmm. it's fun. Because wouldn't it be great to have a companion to go out and do these things with who are your kids?
Yeah. Make sure you don't burn them out on it. But yeah, and they enjoy it. And then they are maybe the next generation to do these kinds of things. Though you never know what's going to catch their imagination. Maybe it's Australia, or maybe it's urban living.
You don't. I think for me, the one thing I think about is I try to get into their world as much as I can. It's hard. I've got so many things in my mind between you know, business and other obligations. It's hard to really be present with them. But I think you could probably go somewhere with them on a trip where it's rainy and awful. And if you were just listening to them and doing the things they want to do, they would think the attention from their parents is everything.
Yeah. Find a way to slow down enough to hook into what their way of thinking is.
You asked me what my dream is. My dream right now would be to structure my life so I can actually get out for an hour. I mean, get out for a week and just kind of have the kind of time I used to have.
Yeah. Well, this has been a fun talk for me. I really appreciate my guest, Bob Kaufman, being here. It's been a wonderful talk. And I was sincere when I said to the listeners, if you have ideas for somebody else you think would be interesting to hear on the show, please send them in to hometownalaska@kska.org. I'm going to be out for a while in terms of being your host, but Kathleen McCoy will be here. Next week, the show is going to be about the air freight industry in Anchorage. It's one of our biggest industries, a lot of people flying all over the world, and something that I think would be of great interest to you. So please tune in. Kristen Spack was our engineer today, did a great job. Thanks for listening. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music for Hometown Alaska is Lead Dog, composed and performed by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Views expressed on Hometown Alaska are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available on our website at kska.org, and CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.